Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/try.
Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Rohan Nagani, joined today by New York Times best-selling author, the Michigan man. Him and Jim Harbaugh just barreling toward the playoffs here. It's Chris Herring. Chris, how's it going, buddy?
I'm good, man. Off camera, off podcast, I've already made like a Michigan analogy reference to you, and yeah, we haven't even started this. So
I could tell you were nervous when I said you and Jim Harbaugh. You were like, "Where's this going?"
Yeah, man. Nah, but because only because he be saying some weird stuff.
Exactly. You never know. Like he's like, talking about, I don't know if I want to be lumped in. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to be lumped in, yeah. But football season's going well so far. So hopefully they can keep it going this weekend.
Hey, I got a question for you. So
yep.
First of all, just a quick housekeeping note to the person who stole the package containing the legs to my dining table, leaving me with only the top of my dining table and no legs to put it on. I don't know what, you know, I don't know your life. I don't know what led you to make that decision. I just hope it's really busy wherever you work. If you have a job, I hope it's just really busy and it sucks how busy it is. That's it. Oh man, you know, dude, the excitement of being like, I'm getting a new dining table, and then it's like, psych, I don't have the legs, just the top. It's been a weird week here, man.
That sounds awful, actually.
Yeah, it sucks, dude.
Wow.
Yeah, but speaking of dining, airing last night, I recently bought this. I'm buying all kinds of weird kitchen stuff, you know, like I'm like very deep into cooking at home culture, I guess you could call it. Okay. So I bought something called the Chef's Press. It's weights that you use while you're cooking food. So, for example, last night I made a grilled cheese and I put these weights on top of the bread so that you get a flat, completely even crust and sear on your bread here. Like you're just getting completely even contact with the pan. It was beautiful. It was the best grilled cheese I've had in my entire life. That's so good that I'm talking about it on the show. It was remarkable. And I'm just curious. You've been like bulking, like it's like you're preparing for like a movie role or something the last year. Every time you come on the show, you look to be in better shape than you were last week. I'm just curious, what's your cheat meal, Chris Herring? Like what's like your go-to, like, I'm really cutting loose. I'm going all out.
My cheat meal. First of all, I think in the last year, I've maybe dropped 15 pounds, which is not, definitely not bulking. Like, I take protein shakes after my workouts. That's like the extent of what I do. I'm not someone that watches my diet all that well. I've been trying to eat way more fish over the last year. So I've gone to like salmon a lot more and different things that you throw on there. And
dude, come on. No. I'm not here for your I'm eating more salmon. I want to know what your cheat meal is, bro.
My cheat meal. A lot of times, man, like I'm a black man whose family is from the South. So soul food of some sort a lot of the time. Try to make it very rare. But this past week, for instance, and I knew that this was coming up, so I was like, let me try to be healthy in the run-up to it. The anniversary, or not even the anniversary of my dad's passed, my dad's birthday. My dad's no longer with us. So every year, normally I try to go down to Texas because that same weekend that his birthday would fall, his mom's birthday, my grandmother's birthday, is the same weekend. She's still down in Texas. She's 86 now. So trying to spend time with family in Texas automatically means you're not going to be eating the healthiest food because it's Texas. So, you know, southern food, basically, soul food, some of which is not like the least healthy, but some of which is definitely not the most healthy either. So cheat meal a lot of times will involve something that is soul food based or soul food.
There we go. There
you know,
we
macaroni go. And cheese is like always something that gets you in trouble, but it's so good. And it's like my favorite food.
You know, I feel like macaroni and cheese was ruined for me at a young age because, like, I started with like Kraft mac and cheese, which I know some people have an affinity for. Man. But as an Indian person, I'm like, it's literally just noodles and cheese. That's it. Where's my masala at? You know what's going on?
That would ruin it for you, man. I gotta bring you to like Thanksgiving one year.
There we go. We'll swap. we'll swap. We'll get some content out of it too. Get those flights paid for.
I mean, there's those shows like Wife Swap and all those other House Swap. It's like Thanksgiving Swap would be a good show. I would
swap
10 out of 10 would watch. And I'm not even really into reality television about those sorts of things. I've never been in like House Swap, but give me some like Thanksgiving Swap. I started dating a Dominican woman last year, and her family was really excited to have me over for Thanksgiving. Her family doesn't even normally like join together for Thanksgiving, but they're like, you're bringing your boyfriend, like we gotta like round the family up. And it was really interesting. To this day, one of the funniest moments I've had over like the last year was last Thanksgiving. My girlfriend's father, who does not speak the most English and was trying to just, you know, bring something almost like potluck style, so he went to the store and bought what he thought was a cake or something, and it was actually cornbread. And so my girlfriend's brother-in-law like ate a slice of cornbread thinking that it was cake, and my man almost choked. And it was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life, because I'm trying to like be respectful, but I'm like, I knew that was cornbread and was kind of wondering why they waited until the end of the meal to eat it, but that's not a part of their culture. So Thanksgiving swap, like, damn, maybe I need to like trademark
this
before
$1 billion
the podcast
idea.
Over.
What do you mean holy you? Hell. I thought we were in on Thanksgiving swap together.
Hey, man, even if we have to split this, whatever it is, how listen, this is not man. A show already.
Let's take it to Spike right after this podcast. But before we go completely off the rails here, there's a lot we want to get into today. Chris and I are going to discuss the top 10 of SI's top 100 list. The entire list is now available for people to read on SI.com. We're going to get into some more stuff on the list, including maybe reliving some of the arguments we had while making the list. But speaking of arguments, let's start with some NBA news that came out last night. Draymond Green reportedly not only striking Jordan Poole in a practice, I believe the word that was used in the Shams report was forcefully. He forcefully struck Jordan Poole after the two of them came chest to chest in an argument. I don't even think you could get odds on Draymond being the teammate to strike another teammate in practice. Like Vegas was like, there's no bet they could make on that where they're not losing money. Included in the report was allegedly some teammates were upset with the way Jordan Poole was acting, knowing that he was in line for a big extension. Andre Iguodala tweeted kind of refuting that report. Chris, I'm just curious what you made of this, what your reaction was. Is this anything, no big deal at all? We discussed, you and I, Draymond, last time we did this podcast together. He's entering a contract year. What did you make of this little kerfuffle?
Yeah, I mean, let me just say, and this is speculative, so like take it as such. Highly doubt someone is running around happy-go-lucky because they know they're about to be paid and, like, you know, somehow putting that in other people's faces or, you know, just kind of being overly jovial about that. It wouldn't be a very good look, just as far as, like, everyone around you is part of the organization and they're trying to, aside from just examining your play, are trying to decide, like, whether or not someone is going to change or be an asshole once they get the money. So part of me kind of doubts. I don't know Jordan Poole that well. I don't know him well at all. I've never met him, but part of me, like, it's not surprising to me that Iguodala would find a way to kind of subtly refute that. It is interesting, and it makes for an interesting sort of dichotomy, the idea that Jordan Poole, obviously, his payday has been talked about for a while. Mm-hmm. Draymond is going to get significant money one way or the other. I think his frustration is kind of the framing and his own admission that he thinks that essentially he's worth the max amount of money for, I guess, an extension, but it's looking more and more like an extension is not going to happen. So, like, mm-hmm. max money because of how important he is to this team. Like, there's nothing about his body of work that suggests that projecting forward that Draymond would be worth the absolute maximum amount of money that you can hand him. But he also is kind of such a cog in that machine that you could make the argument that taking him out of the mix mm-hmm. in that situation could really put them at risk of not being a title contender anymore. So it's an interesting dichotomy when you consider that, like, Draymond isn't getting what he wants. Jordan Poole presumably will get what he wants. It would make for a great headline story, like, you know, storyline. But it doesn't surprise me, again, that they're refuting this. But no, Draymond is highly strung. We've known that. I mean, Ethan Sherwood Strauss wrote that story years ago, kind of, that I thought was really good for ESPN, about the idea of, you know, Draymond is so on edge all the time mm-hmm. that it's great on the one hand because you can, you know, probably be propelled by it and you're lighting a fire under him. At the same time, like, you don't know if you want to light a fire under some TNT all the time mm-hmm. Because it can explode and it can be bad. And we remember the thing, you know, a few years ago about the people outside the locker room, security having to get involved.
That was one of the craziest days in recent, where all of a sudden we're getting this locker room report coming out of halftime. And it's like, wait, what happened? And then that was the same game Steph Curry hit the game winner from half court.
Right, right. So there's that. Hell, Kevin Durant, like, I think kind of acknowledged, like, yeah. on some level that had something to do with why he left. That blow up between he and Draymond. Mm-hmm. The team, generally speaking, has sided with, you know, has basically, they haven't shown an inability to punish Draymond or to come down mm-hmm. on Draymond when they think he's gone too far. So, you know, I think that this is probably going to be handled the same way. He's highly strung. We don't know the exact in and outs of, like, what happened here, so I don't want to speculate too mm-hmm. much, but hopefully it's just something that could be put to bed in the next day or two, because it was just something where, you know, competitive nature bubbles over, and we know that that's more true of Draymond than anybody else with all the technicals he gets and everything else that's ever happened with him. We saw it backfire to where they maybe lost a title because mm-hmm. they probably lost a title because of it. So it happens. It's part of what you live and die with Draymond.
It's fascinating, man, and it's going to be interesting because this is one of those things that you, when you are trying to judge a team on paper and figure out who's going to do what this season, like, how do you factor in something like Draymond Green playing in a contract year and how that affects his motivation? Is he going to be more on edge? Is he going to be trying to preserve his body? I mean, does he feel like he has something to prove? Is he going to have an eye toward which team is going to offer me the most money this summer? And you never know how that can manifest itself. I mean, we saw it to an extent with the Suns and DeAndre Ayton last year, even a team that was first place in the league. I did a story on DeAndre Ayton before the playoffs. He's talking about the vengeance he feels, how excited he was to get back in the playoff run. But then the team faces adversity. And again, we don't know the ins and outs of what happened with him in that game 7, but he has, you know, words with Monty Williams. It's clearly still a frosty relationship.
Yes.
These kind of contract things can can have an effect and manifest themselves in different ways. And, you know, Draymond's a pro. He's been around the league long enough. He understands the business, certainly. I don't think that he's going to take plays off or anything like that, certainly. But it's going to be an interesting dynamic to watch during the season. The pool thing is funny because he is in line for an extension. And I think he's interesting to talk about. We talked about Tyler Hero a little bit. Earlier this week, he signed the big extension before the season starts. 4 years, $120 million plus incentives. I think it's a very big number when you think about it at first. Then you think the cap's going to spike. You know, does the team want to deal with restricted free agency? Was he going to get this offer anyway? Blah, blah, blah. I think it's interesting from a Heat perspective how much money they have tied up in Duncan, Hero, Butler, Adebayo, and Lowry for a team that generally tries to avoid paying the luxury tax. So I think that's something to keep an eye on there. But I wanted to ask, because going into our top 100 list, we had Jordan Poole ranked 81, and we had Tyler Hero ranked 61. And of course, you know, in that range, that sounds like a big gap. In that range is not quite as big gap between players. But what kind of extension do you think Poole should get? I'm just curious what your thought. Let me back that up, because we kind of know how these things work. Like, players are going to get a certain amount of money. I think we probably both expect him to get an extension in the neighborhood of Heroes. What are just your thoughts on Jordan Poole as a player? Because, you know, we did have him 81 on the list. Do you see him being kind of a key cog for that Warriors team moving forward, because they have some interesting contract decisions to make?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, to your initial question before I get to like what he should get, is that he's very similar right now to Hero. Mm-hmm. I think he's got maybe a little bit more, like, you maybe see a little bit more potential in his ability as, at least with this team, someone that has a little bit more ability to shake a little bit. Obviously, mm-hmm. Hero has that to his game, so it's not to downplay that. But I think Poole, while he is excellent, he's got a lot more ability to kind of play freely because of who else he's mm-hmm. playing with.
Right.
And so he's more beneficial to Golden State than I think he would be for just like any team in the league. And so I imagine that they view themselves as boosting what he is, even though he's a young player. He grew up in their system. And I mean, let's be real too. Early on, Jordan Poole was rough. And I'm saying that as someone that was a big supporter of his, having watched him at Michigan, which we've already talked about on this podcast. So he was pretty rough, and they buffed him up really nicely. It's very clear he put the work in. But he's a shiny diamond right now, you know, for the work that they've done with him, the work he's done with them. But that said, he's still a flawed player who looked pretty rough during the finals. And I think that's okay. You know, Boston is a really good defense. But I think the bigger challenge is that this is somewhat similar to Hero. He's not a very good defender. I mean, that's putting it lightly. That's, you know... you would hope to see more from him defensively. He's out of position a lot of the time. He just kind of gets blown past a lot of the time. And Hero is similar, except I think Hero maybe doesn't really look the part as much as Jordan Poole does. Mm-hmm. Like, Poole looks like he should have a little bit more ability than Hero, just looking at their size and everything like that. So with both of them that you would hope to see, and Pat Riley even said that about Hero, mm-hmm. I don't know if the Warriors have been vocal about that with Poole, maybe because he's a slightly younger player, as far as how long he's been in the game and how long he's been part of this core. So based on that, I mean, I think really the Warriors, with what they have and what they do, I would imagine that they would try to settle for a lower number than the max. They're not going to want to just give that up. One, because Poole has areas of his game that can still really grow. But two, he's also expected to be part of a core where you're going to have a lot of guys reaching into the pot asking for money, or asking for money and then trying to reach their hand in the pot, whichever way you want to put it. We're talking about Draymond wanting a max. Okay, you're probably not going to end up there with him, but it's probably not going to be terribly, terribly, terribly far off from it if Draymond gets what he wants. You already have Steph under contract for huge money. I remember Klay signing his deal a couple years ago. I don't know exactly what he's at now. But, you know, we're sitting here looking at Wiseman. We're looking at all these other guys that could potentially be more than what they are. Wiggins is going to be up for a big payday. Yeah. How much are you willing to pay Poole if it means that you're going to have to let some of these other guys go that could realistically be part of what you're doing for the next 2, 3, 4 years? Mm-hmm. So I don't expect for them to end up at a max level with Poole. If he does that, then, you know, more power to him and his agent. It would be speaking volumes about what they could do. But I can guarantee that the Warriors, and I think rightfully so, are going to try to push to suppress that number a little bit, just if for no other reason, to try to make sure they can take care of everybody else too.
It's really going to come down to whether this ownership continues to just say, F the luxury tax, which I think we should celebrate. Honestly, it's what all owners should do. Because let's say they give Poole the Hero deal, the same exact deal as Hero. He's making nearly $30 million next year. They're looking at salaries at $51 million for Steph next year, $43 million for Klay, potentially $30 million for Jordan Poole. Draymond, if he picks up his option, let's say they come to no conclusion, he wants to pick up his option, $27 million, or he signs a new deal, it's going to be in that neighborhood. You're going to be in the mid-20s at least for Draymond. Then you have Wiggins, who's an expiring deal at $33 million. I don't see him taking a pay cut after the finals he had. He's going to be entering his prime. He's only 27 right now. So
they could have him coming up.
Yeah, big year, man. And they could have a potentially incredibly, again, continue to break records in terms of how much money they're paying. And, you know, I talked about this with Gons a few weeks ago. I've seen the NBA saying we need to figure out this luxury tax thing. I think it's dumb. I think it's counterintuitive. I think teams like the Warriors should stay together. We should encourage owners to spend their money on player salaries and on keeping teams together. And if the Warriors are willing to do it, I see no reason why not bring Poole back. If they're that desperate to avoid the luxury tax, if there's one team that maybe we're willing to make excuses for, it's the Warriors, even though if they sold the franchise today, it would probably be, I don't know, $10 billion. I think that I don't know that they should bring back Poole, to be honest. They got Moses Moody waiting in the wings. People are excited about him. They have Wiggins. I think that I'd rather have a combination of Wiggins, Moody, and Draymond than Poole if I'm being forced to make that decision.
Well, if that's your conclusion, man, I don't think we're talking necessarily about letting the man walk. I think you're going to
trading him. Yeah.
And I mean, it's just crazy just the amount of stuff that the Warriors can trade. Like,
yeah,
I've been going on like real estate tours, and I really like where I live lately. I've been going on real estate tours lately, and I really like where I live. But my real estate person wanted to just kind of see where I was. He's like, "Oh, if you decide to sell this place, let me know. It's really nice." Blah 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 blah. And it's just like the idea of having something, it makes you think like, "Oh, yeah. Well, this is nice. Like, I wonder what I could get for it." And playing that game, the Warriors, you know, to their credit last year, did not do that and not buy into that. They could have with Wiseman. And, you know, they could have gone for something, I won't say flash in the pan. Who knows what it could have yielded them to have done that. But the idea of looking at their roster just top to bottom, you didn't even mention Kuminga.
Yeah.
Who might
be in line for the best season out of the youngsters this year.
I mean, I would hear that argument. I think it's completely valid. It's a situation, man, where like if they just decided that they wanted to just go out and like, let's just go for as many titles as we can win in like the next 3 years, 4 years, and let's not worry as much about the future. But again, and I think you and I talked about this maybe the last time we were on, or maybe me and Gons did. I think that they're trying to thread this needle a little bit. I think they're trying to become the new age Spurs. And to do that, you don't normally cash your chips in and trade them for win now talent. You normally kind of let those guys grow along with your vets who can make use of, you know, some of these guys are going to be playing more like veterans because they're with Steph, because Steph makes the game easier for them. And I think that's the hope when we talk about Wiseman, is that having a vertical threat for Steph and Steph having someone athletic enough is Wiseman. It'll be interesting to see what they do, but they've got, just like last year, they will have a lot of options if they decide to go that route. Yeah. I would be really surprised if they don't try to make something happen with Poole, particularly just because of what it could mean with another creator, another guy with that sort of range, if and when Steph is out. Obviously, he's not Steph, but man, like it's a nice guy to be able to bring off your bench or a nice guy to have if Clay is just ice cold like he was at times last year. He's got to work on his defense and get better there. But I know a lot of fans in San Francisco that'll be upset if they don't seek to make something work with him. But you raise a really good point.
Also, I just remember DiVincenzo's on the team. He's going to have an incredible season for them. Like, he's going to be so good.
I hope he's healthy.
Me too.
I hope he's healthy. Yeah, I couldn't believe the Kings let that man walk. I could not believe
I thought he was
it.
Looking better in Sacramento too. I mean, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, the Bucks had to do what they had to do, but I bet they kind of wish they had him on the playoff roster instead of moving him. Let's get into some top 100 stuff, Chris. The full list is out. I encourage everyone to check it out on SI.com. The top 10 came out today. Just in case you're listening to this podcast, you haven't seen the top 100. I'll read out the top 10 to people at least. Going from 10 to 1, we have Jimmy Butler, Jason Tatum, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, Luka Doncic, Joel Embiid, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Nikola Jokic, Giannis Antetokounmpo. I know Chris is especially excited to have Giannis number one after he wanted Giannis number one last season and then chided us for an entire year until we put Giannis number one on this list. I want to start, actually, because there was an argument about who should be number one, which we'll get into in a second. But I want to start about, actually, the 4-5-6 range. So we had Kevin Durant at number 4, Joel Embiid at number 5, and Luka Doncic at number 6. And what's funny about this is you, Wu, and I, who did the list, ranked each of these players separately. So, for example, I had Luka 4, Embiid 5, KD 6. You had Embiid 4, KD 5, Luka 6. This was, I thought, maybe the hardest stretch of the entire top 100 was trying to separate these three players. I went Luka just based on, I think, durability. I think he's more durable than Embiid and Durant. I think he carries a bigger burden than the two of them. That's why I had him the highest out of the three. I'm just curious, like, was that a difficult stretch for you? Did it come easy to you to split those guys up? What did you think of that particular kind of trio right there?
I don't think it was actually that hard for me. I think, first of all, I think you could go any order. And I think for most of the stuff we did as a group in ranking these guys, I think with the exception of maybe three of them, especially the highly ranked guys, I was like, look, if you guys want to make that shift, like, I kind of feel this way, but I'm not going to argue or like shoot someone down for arguing this. I think especially like that middle group of guys from like 4 to 8 or so, and our list was like pretty fluid. I feel like it wasn't particularly hard for me, because to me, the reason that we're looking at Durant and Embiid being so far down the list in the first place, especially Durant, someone that, you know, that a lot of people, I think most people after his playoff performance last year felt like was the number one guy. He wasn't my number one guy, but most people felt like he was. The only real thing you could point to.
You had to slide it in one more time.
You know what time it is, and it'll be the last time I ever do it.
He wasn't my number one. You're like the Drewski meme. Like, wasn't my number one guy.
You know what time it is. It'll be the last time I ever do it. But the only thing you could point to if you didn't have Durant number one, for the most part, was like health. You know, that he'd come off the injury, that he'd spent a lot of time injured. Despite all that, even when he came back, was like shooting 60% or whatever the hell. You know, was dominant in the playoffs, almost dragged. Basically what Giannis did to the Celtics this past postseason. KD almost dragged Brooklyn, hobbled Brooklyn with Irving out and Harden playing on one leg. He almost dragged them across the line against a team that eventually won the championship in Milwaukee. So if you weren't going to pick him, the only thing you could point to was health. And based on that, for me, and the reason that I went the order I did, where I think I had Embiid ahead of Durant, was like, okay, that's the same thing is true of Embiid. If he's playing, he might be the most productive player per minute in the league. the thing was, for several years, he wasn't playing much, or yeah. he wasn't playing as much as the other guys. The last couple of years, last year in particular, he was basically healthy. So I'm not going to hold that against him. If it's him and Durant head-to-head, all things considered, I'd rather take Embiid if they're both healthy. Or at least there's more of a track record lately for Embiid to be healthy than there is for Durant. So that was why I went that order. I feel like it's relatively close. Doncic was more, you know, I always view the rankings as what are you going to do this coming year? Not what did you do last year, although you're obviously taking that into account. I don't love the idea that they take Brunson off that roster, or I guess let Brunson walk is a better way to put it. Luka already had like pretty much a historically high usage rate for a guard, or for, you know, someone at his position. And now you're taking the second best scorer off the team. I could see his efficiency taking a hit. I might be wrong on that, but I could see that happening 100% here. He might have better counting stats, but I could see his efficiency taking a hit because he's got even less scores around him. The one guy that he has really as a high-level scorer next to him is a guy that's not the most dependable in Christian Wood. So that was why I had him where I had him. A lot of people think Luka's going to win MVP this year. I don't think it's a bad argument. I just think that he's kind of thin outside of him, and I don't like – I kind of feel like the fact that he got his team to the conference finals was part of the reason that people felt inclined to move him up. But I don't see them repeating that this year, and I don't know that his numbers will be more efficient than they were last year. So it wasn't terribly hard for me to rank these guys, but at the same time, I don't feel so strongly about 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 to where, you know, I felt like it was – blasphemous that somebody had one person in one spot versus the other.
I want to talk about Embiid because when I first thought about this list, however many weeks or months ago now, I thought I was going to put Embiid over Jokic. And I talked about this with Wu. I talked about it with the Texan you guys. And Pina was making fun of me for it, even though I think Pina's methodology is equally stupid. he was like, so-and-so made all NBA last year. I was like, I don't care, man. I just was thinking if I want to win a basketball game right now, or if I want to win a championship game next season, and I have the entire pool of NBA players in front of me, in what order would I pick them? That was genuinely how I decided I wanted to make my list this year. Okay. And I was thinking about Embiid versus Jokic. And again, you said permanent production. Like, Jokic averaged 3 less points than Embiid last year, but I think 4 more assists. I mean, unquestionably, I think carried... You know, it might not bear out in usage, but the burden he carried, considering the injuries on his team, what he was able to get out of that Denver roster was remarkable. And, you know, I wrote about this. I think he has complete mastery of offensive basketball right now. He's a true quarterback on the floor. I'm talking about Jokic. At the same time, you think about what Embiid is as a paint protector. He's kind of like an automatic top 10 defense. He doesn't get talked about in the way that, like, Gobert does, but I'd rather have Embiid. Even on the defensive end of the floor. And I was like, how am I not tipping the scales in his favor? And I came back to Jokic just because the guys won back-to-back MVPs for a reason. You know, all those offensive reasons I listed. Was that an easy thing for you to separate Embiid and Jokic? Because I think that's a debate that's going to continue for the rest of their careers. And depending on who wins MVPs, et cetera, the defense is going to come into play. That's obviously a big talking point. How did you separate those guys? Because I eventually came back to Jokic just because of, you know, the durability is a big one as well. I mean, he's never played. I was looking it up. You know, Jokic has never played less than 72 games in a season. And the only time he played 72, that was the max number of games. That was the COVID shortened year in 21. So how did you separate those guys? What was some of the reasoning for you?
So for me, it wasn't that big of a debate for me. I think just on a base level, where I do agree with Michael, you know, from the standpoint of it not being that close, is that, you know, if you had Jokic MVP the last 2 years, like I did, and I think a lot of us did, and you're not putting him in your top two, at worst top three, it's kind of like, well, how much do you or do you not value the regular season? And the idea of health, which if you're, you know, if you're weighing that in, like I have the last couple of years, even though Embiid's been healthier, he hasn't been healthier than Jokic has. Jokic gets more opportunities, you know, because he's got the ball in his hands. He's kind of the guy that's running their offense a lot of the times, particularly without Murray. Okay. So even if you think that maybe some of Jokic's counting stats maybe take a little bit of a hit, or at least scoring, because he's getting some of his guys back, he's also going to be in a better winning situation. Mm-hmm. He's also going to have more guys to pass to and maybe get more assists because of it. He's also going to get the ball and better shots because he's playing with better guys. So no matter what you've thought of Jokic, you know, basically the flip of what I just said with Doncic is that Luka isn't going to have Brunson. Okay, but Jokic is getting all his guys back this year, or at least the two that most people would say matter the most. So it was kind of a no-brainer for me to put him there. I felt like it was more of a question of, like, should Jokic be one or two versus should Jokic be ahead of Embiid or not? Because I felt like that part was pretty obvious to me. You know, I think he had as good a case for number one as anyone, quite frankly. And maybe I would have considered him a little bit more had Giannis not essentially dragged Milwaukee right up to the line, over the line against Boston without Middleton. I felt like it was very, like I said, Giannis, what he did was every bit what Durant did the season before that in the postseason against Milwaukee, except Giannis has two out of the last four MVPs, granted the first two of those four, but also won a finals MVP. So to me, you know, it's close enough to where I understand the debate, but I think Jokic, for me, was a pretty easy number two. And I do want to say that I think that was one where I wasn't arguing most of these very vehemently. I do feel like when we talked about Steph and where he was, Jokic was the only one where I kind of put my foot down and was like, I think Jokic has to be ahead of Steph. Well, and that was one of the only ones I can remember saying that
about. We're about to get into that. I'm just going to drop in a couple last youngs on Jokic. Last year, without his two best offensive players, averaged a career-high field goal percentage, which is just insane to me. 58.3% from the field last year. His career-high in assists is 8.3. I think he's going to get to double digits this year. Just with Jamal back, Michael Porter Jr. back. They were not a good three-point shooting team, Denver, last year. I think he's gonna rack up some more assists as he plays with better players, and I think he's going to want to shoot less. But let's get into it, because I tweeted this. We had this argument. This was the longest argument, really the biggest one we had. The same way you felt about Giannis, I was adamant that I thought Steph should have been number one on our list. He's never been number one on the SI Top 100. The top three I had was Steph, Giannis, Jokic, in that order, Jokic at three. And my argument was simple. Like, if I'm picking players 1 to 100 and I want to win a game, I'm picking Steph first in the league right now. If I want to win a championship next season, I'm picking Steph first in the league right now. You know, there was pushback from you, Jeremy Pino, telling me his hurt Celtics ass, telling me not to get too caught up on the finals. And I was like, okay, Mike, you don't get too caught up on the finals, buddy.
His hurt Celtics ass.
Get out of here.
I'm gonna text him that before we're even off this podcast.
Yeah, please do. And so, yeah, I just thought, and again, there are good reasons. I'm not trying to insult you guys, but I was like, part of me was like, are we overthinking this, not putting Steph at number one? Like, it's freaking Steph Curry. I mean, I still think he's the player in the league. And I said this, I literally said this while we were arguing on the phone, in case anyone wants to know how big a nerds we were. It's me, Herring, and Wu in a Google Meet. And I'm like, I think Steph is the player in the league that opposing coaches have to worry about the most. I still think he impacts the game, even though he's not. You know, I had to write the description, and I was trying to say, why didn't we put him at number one? It's like, well, he's not two-way dominant. He's not on the ball as much as someone like Jokic or Giannis even. But even as I'm saying it, like as I'm writing it, I'm like, this sounds insane to say. It's Steph Curry. So I thought he should have been number one on the list. I as much as I love Jokic, I mean, you and I have been the guys last few years, wrote the big Jokic MVP stories. You know, it's on the record how I feel about him. I still just have a hard time believing that anyone of my colleagues would really want Jokic on their team rather than Steph.
So it's a completely fair debate to have. I don't think that there's that much debate that Steph has the ability to impact games and often does impact games more than anybody offensively. And I will say this too, and I think it's interesting. I hadn't really thought about it until just now, that Steph and the way we think about Steph's defense is actually very similar on a guard scale to the way that we've long talked about Jokic's defense, where he was kind of ridiculed for it for a long time. And then there was kind of that growth curve for him to where people would still make jokes and say, oh, this guy like doesn't defend at all. And it's like, no, if you watch the games and you like watch the sequences, he's actually impacting a lot of things because he's really smart with the way he defends. His positioning is good. He's not quite as easy to just kind of bowl over, just knock out of the way as you would think. He can make things happen. Active hands. Jokic and Steph are actually very similar in that regard defensively. But that said, I think that there are always going to be more plays that a big man can impact in an NBA game with so much being at the three-point line and the rim. A big man will always have the ability to impact more defensively than a guard, particularly one that's not being tasked, like not a Marcus Smart or not someone that's being tasked with guarding bigger wings. Like Steph is not really going to do that a whole lot aside from switches and stuff like that. So I would give that edge to Jokic, even Embiid or someone like that is just having to be involved more defensively. And I also think there's something to be said for the fact that Steph and enjoying, granted, he did not have a full strength team. I would argue that the guys he was missing down the stretch last year were, you know, like a Wiseman or someone that maybe wouldn't have made the biggest impact last year anyway. But, you know, I'm not saying you did this, but I do think a lot of people were kind of looking at the result of last year and saying like, man, they just won the title. Steph clearly was the most dominant player in those finals. Mm-hmm. And the biggest reason they won, he should be number one. And I just kind of feel like if that's the rationale that a lot of people are using and Jokic was playing without his two best players, what are we talking about? Mm-hmm. Like Denver very easily could have been in a conversation like that too. So I just kind of felt like I couldn't put him ahead of Jokic for that reason. I didn't see enough of a fundamental difference in what Steph was doing versus the previous years. But you're right. I do think it at least merits raising the question, like, what would Steph have to do to be number one? And I think that's maybe the best question of all. And, that's something that I would have to think about. But I couldn't justify putting him over Jokic, and I didn't feel like I could justify putting him over Giannis, even though I know you're right. They do game plan for Steph more. But some of the stuff that Giannis in particular does, I don't even think you can game plan for, particularly what he does on defense. I think about the play he made on Phoenix in the finals with the block. Like, you can't game plan for that. You just have to hope it doesn't happen.
It's impossible to split up these three players. It really is. We'll never know what they look like in different contexts, etc. It's also just, this is going to sound silly, but I literally was like, I don't know anyone is more feared in a playoff series than Steph. Like, I just think that if you're an opponent, even when you're playing against Giannis, you feel like you have a better chance. You're like, maybe we can force him to take a lot of jump shots tonight. And I say that knowing that he's putting up 50 in every playoff game that matters. It's like he's going for 45. And I'm the guy that's like, just sag off, you know? And I get it. Yeah. And I get that with Jokic. It's like, we're going to turn him into a passer. We're going to frustrate him. And then it's like he's putting up 30, 11, and 8.
Right.
I just think that there's just like an element of fear when Steph is on the court, like an element of unfairness. Like, you just think about that Denver season. I know Denver was shorthanded, but the number of times that like Steph would come on the floor and it was just like, there is truly nothing we can do. The helplessness that he sows, I think, is more so than those other players. And that was kind of a deciding factor for me. Just know, Herring, if the Warriors win another title, you thought you were annoying about Giannis this last year, bro. You're going to be hearing from me every day. I'm going to be sending you edible arrangements. Like, it's going to be nonstop.
But it would be, you know what? And I'll say this and somewhat jokingly, but also seriously, as someone that like has beaten the Giannis drum for literally a year now. If Steph puts up another year like this and he wins a title, particularly in a year where like Wiggins is the second best player on his team, or in that setting, you should shout from the mountaintops, because this was a situation where Steph finished three on our list. At least when I was arguing Giannis, he was number two behind Durant on our list. So, I mean, not just that I would have put Giannis ahead of him, but also Jokic. Like,
yeah.
I think you'll have every right to shout that. And again, like I said, and I had not really thought about this way, even if even if someone like me doesn't think Steph deserves to be number one on the list necessarily, okay, then what's the pathway to him getting there, given everything he's accomplished?
Yeah.
Or do you just not think he could ever get there? And, you know, winning another title, particularly if he does it without, you know, Clay being the Clay from 4 or 5 years ago, without Draymond, you know, having everything that he used to have, just as he starts to get a little bit older, and the team having some youth around the edges in certain spots. Wiseman obviously will be a bigger part of what they do this year. At some point, you would have to kind of acknowledge that, like, maybe, and this has been the question about him, like, maybe we're just not even capable of grasping all the ways in which Steph impacts the game. And it is a question worth asking, and it will be very, very worth asking if he wins again with the sort of shortcomings that the team had last year.
I don't want to actually try to answer this question because I think we'll be here for literally hours, but it's interesting to think about our best, most impactful, and easiest to build a championship team around the same question, because it's possible most impactful and best, as crazy as it sounds, aren't the same thing. It's crazy to think about, like, is Jokic on a per-minute production level better than Steph but harder to build a championship team around? Like, that's a possibility, and those are, like, you know, questions that are probably too deep to answer on a list like this, but it's
esoteric.
Yeah,
but I hear you.
Yeah, it's a very kind of, like, interesting discussion for the Open Floor Globe to have. Before we get out of here, I did want to talk about one more player on our list. We put him at 10 last year, just because, like, maybe, we don't know. And then this year he's number 8. That is Kawhi Leonard. I said he was the, like, original two-way efficiency cyborg. Just, you know, like, throw him on Luka in a Game 7 and say, make him work. Meanwhile, take all the mid-range jumpers you want and kind of slowly choke this team out into submission. He's at 8. I wouldn't be shocked if he's back in the top 3 next year. I mean, we have no idea what to expect, so I'm not going to pretend here and sit here and be like, hey, Chris, you know the kind of season Kawhi is going to have. Tell me about it. But, like, generally, your thoughts on the Clippers, are you buying in? Are you skeptical? Do you need to wait and see? I mean, it's, I think the Kawhi's had one healthy postseason since 2017 that wasn't in the bubble, which I know is so technically two, but the bubble one was obviously an outlier in some ways. So how are you feeling about all that?
I kind of feel like I don't have that much choice but to be optimistic about it. I tend to feel better about players that have had, like, a whole offseason to recover, particularly when it was from something that they tore in their knee, or something that they had repaired in a knee. So that, you know, that's Jamal Murray, that I feel like goes for Kawhi Leonard. We've seen, I mean, frankly, when he came off of the San Antonio situation and sat out and then came back and won a title the next year in Toronto, like, I feel like he's got a pretty good track record of coming back and maybe not being fully healthy for, like, the next 4 years or 3 years or whatever, but, like, that next year he's probably going to be really good. And not just that, but also the fact that Paul George will be back and should be healthy enough to go. Let's not forget that part of the reason they missed the playoffs probably was the fact that Paul George couldn't play in a deciding game for them because of COVID. And the idea that if you had COVID in a play-in scenario that you just couldn't play and your team had to play without you. Still looked like they might make it even with that at one point during that stretch. So it's not just Kawhi. It's also Paul George. It's also the fact that they've got maybe the deepest rotation in the league with Norm Powell and Robert Covington. John Wall is there. They already have Reggie Jackson. You know, they've got Zubac. It's a very, very likable team. It's very easy to kind of convince yourself that they could accomplish something serious here. I think even if Kawhi was out for a while, that they could, you know, be a 50-win team potentially. So I'm curious to see how much Kawhi will play. I do not get the impression that he cares a whole lot about awards and accolades. I think he just wants to win.
Or the regular season.
Yeah, pretty much. But, like, even if he did, I kind of get the impression that they're probably going to be very – moderate with him and Paul George.
If I had to bet an over under on combined games that Paul George and I was going to say Paul and Kawhi, no one calls Paul George Paul. If I had to put an over under on the number of games PG and Kawhi will play, I'm going under 120 on the regular season. I think they both.
Okay.
Yeah.
I also think to some extent, man, like I think a lot of us are being forced to rethink a lot of things as far as like what is the cutoff for like, not awards, but like, I think statistical, it's 58, right? For like, you need to play 58 games to qualify for like the scoring title. I think that was how many Bam played last year and then like put his hands up like this, like, wait, how am I not defense player of the year? We're starting to get to a point where you can miss.
Bam was robbed by a conspiracy purported by the Democratic People's Republic of Boston and their propagandists, such as Michael the Pod Pina, who voted Marcus Smart for Defensive Player of the Year.
I did too.
Give me a break. Pina and I saw each other in New York like a month ago, 2 months ago. It was the first time we'd seen each other in person for 3 years. He's on paternity leave. Did we talk about the life-changing experience of becoming a father? Did we talk about what's happened in our lives in the last 3 years? No, we argued Bam versus Smart for Defensive Player of the Year. Oh, and I don't blame you, Chris. There was a lot of misinformation about that award out there last year. And
you just basically called me a lower information voter.
I'm saying people were susceptible to the propaganda that was coming across their Twitter feeds.
I think honestly, let me just stay on track here. I'll address all this at a later point, or I'll address this when I come in town and you beat me down over my opinion too, like you did with Michael. My point is, I think Bam played like a hair under 60 games. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to feel like that's going to be the norm.
Right.
Certainly guys that are somewhat injury prone, like Kawhi, PG, but just generally too, we're like, if people are starting to expect to win major awards playing less than 60 games, and maybe COVID is a factor as well. Like, if you're going to miss a few games every year because of that, if it's going to be a seasonal sort of thing, 58 games, 60 games, less than 120 between the two of them might not actually be like a huge problem for them. Like, that might be what I would say. 65 is a pretty normal amount for any year anyway for star players at this point in the NBA. So if they play 58 each and are a hair under the 120 that you're saying combined, I don't even think that's a problem for them. They would probably take it as long as they were healthy going into the playoffs.
Absolutely. It will be very interesting to watch. Chris, this was a lot of fun. I'm glad the top 100 is in the rearview mirror and we don't have to worry about it for another 10 or 11 months. That'll do it for today's episode. Thank you again to all our listeners. We have a very exciting early week episode next week, so everyone stay tuned for that. I think people are going to be really excited about that one. Please keep the emails coming. We're getting some good emails coming in. Shout out to Eric. Shout out to Thaddeus. Please keep the emails coming. We're gonna get to that mailbag episode, I promise. openfloormail@gmail.com. Until then, everyone continue to enjoy the NBA offseason. Whoa.